The next reading is taken from John chapter 1, verses 1 to 18. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, but the darkness has not understood it. There came a man who was sent from God. His name was John. He came as a witness to testify concerning that light, so that through him all men might believe. He himself was not the light. He came only as a witness to the light. The true light that gives light to every man was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who received him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of human decision, or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. John testifies concerning him. He cries out, saying, "This was he of whom I said, 'He who comes after me has surpassed me, because he was before me.' From the fullness of his grace we have all received one blessing after another. For the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known."
On the website of the Louvre Museum in Paris, you can actually take a closer look at some of the artworks in their collection. And so if you go into their what's called their closer look section, you'll see that the first painting listed there is called The Madonna of the Rabbit. Now, I may be showing my ignorance here, and I'm sure you're all a very cultured bunch, but I must confess that Madonna of the Rabbit wasn't exactly in my general knowledge. Perhaps you've come across it before, it was a new one on me. But I was somewhat relieved then to spot this next painting on their website in the closer look section, which I did recognise. Oh, fantastic. The Mona Lisa. I mean, everyone knows about the Mona Lisa. Surely the most famous painting in the world. We all know about it, don't we? 15th century portrait. Leonardo da Vinci, the eyes sort of follow you around the room and a bit of a funny smile. And you think, well, what more could there possibly be to know about the Mona Lisa? This closer look section on the website for the study on the Mona Lisa, it begins with this line. It says, "Forget the cliches and look at the painting." Forget the cliches and look at the painting. And that is a challenge which could equally well be applied to the Christian faith. Because like the Mona Lisa, it's very familiar. Like the Mona Lisa, most people think they know what it's on about. And so like the Mona Lisa, it's surrounded by cliches and misconceptions and wrong assumptions. And for the next few minutes, I just want to invite you to take a closer look with me. Take a closer look at the painting. Forget the cliches, look at the painting. The painting in this case being some verses in John's Gospel that were just read to us by Mary. Some verses about the very first Christmas. The final lines of the reading we just had challenge five common assumptions. Five common assumptions. The first common assumption is that Jesus was just a good teacher. The idea being that Jesus, he was just a wise man. He went around doing lots of good things, but he was basically just a good teacher. But just take a closer look at how John's Gospel begins. It says, "In the beginning was the Word. The Word was with God. The Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made." And now just look down at verse 14. It says, "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us." The Word was God. The Word became flesh. In Jesus, God himself has come and pitched his tent among us. In Jesus, the Creator God has stepped onto the stage of human history as a man. And that truth is so staggering that it's easy to miss it in the familiar carols that we sing. But line after line in the carols is proclaiming this staggering truth. He came down to earth from heaven, who is God and Lord of all. Lo, within a manger lies he who built the starry skies. Veiled in flesh, the Godhead see, hail the incarnate deity. Now, someone who makes those sort of claims, as Jesus himself went on to do, cannot just be a good teacher. He's either a lot more than a good teacher, i.e. he's God, or he's a lot less than a good teacher, i.e. he's mad or bad. C.S. Lewis put it like this. He said, a man who was merely a man and said the sort of things that Jesus said would not be a great moral teacher. He would either be a lunatic on a level with a man who thinks he's a poached egg, or else he would be the devil of hell. You must make your choice. Either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman, or something worse. The other week, my wife got a phone call to get down to the Barkentine Birthing Centre here on the Isle of Dogs, ASAP, with our seven-month-old boy. Apparently that the Prime Minister was coming on a visit, and he wanted to meet a woman who'd given birth there recently. Later that day on the news at 10, there was a report which ended with a clip of this visit, which showed the Prime Minister having a chat with my wife and with our baby boy, whom the narrator described as the future of Britain. Our baby boy, the future of Britain. It's just one of those wonderful moments. Well, Nelson Nodder may be the future of Britain, and of course all our hopes are pinned on the poor guy. But Jesus Christ is unique. Unlike any other child ever born in history, he is God become man. When we look at the painting, we see that Jesus cannot have just been a good teacher. A second common assumption is that we decide what God is like. We decide what God is like. Now, no one would put it quite as bluntly as that. But what many people do say, and which amounts to basically the same thing, is, I like to think of God as. So I like to think of God as someone who accepts anyone, regardless of what they think or do. Or my idea of God is dot, dot, dot. To which the obvious response is, well, how do you know? How do you know that's what God is like? What are you basing your ideas on? In verse 18 it says, at the bottom there, no one, and then over the page, no one has ever seen God, but God the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known. No one has ever seen God. So how can we possibly know what God is like? Any views we may have about God, they're just mere speculation, unless God has revealed himself. The Christmas message is that in Jesus, the unseen God has made himself visible. It says, God, the one and only, who is at the Father's side, has made him known. So Jesus reveals to us what God is like. The God who is really there, not just the God of our imaginations. We got a leaflet through the door, as I'm sure you've had thousands of these things, from Planet Pizza. Begins with the invitation, create your own pizza. And it gives you this list of toppings. And you select your preferences, you create your ideal pizza according to your personal taste. But that is not what it's like with God. It's not like that with God. We can't just create our own ideal God, like creating a pizza. God is a reality outside of ourselves. We don't create God, God created us. And so the question is, what is God really like? The God who is actually there. In Jesus, God has made himself known. A third assumption is that God accepts those who are good. So the idea runs that the Christian message is basically about how to be a better person. And I guess if you did a survey in the street, that is essentially what you would find people think. That if you ask the question, what does it mean to be a Christian? Most people would say it is about living your life by the Ten Commandments. It's about living by the Sermon on the Mount. But when you take a closer look at the painting, it is not like that at all. That is not the essence of it. Verse 17 of the passage said, "For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. From the fullness of his grace, we have all received one blessing after another," or literally grace upon grace. Jesus did not come to bring us a new set of rules to live our lives by. He came to bring us God's grace. That is to say, God's mercy, God's forgiveness, his undeserved love. Over the page in verse 29, when John the Baptist sees Jesus coming towards him, he doesn't say, "Look, the teacher with a new set of rules." He says, "Look, the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." Jesus came to die for us on the cross so that we might be forgiven. He came on a divine rescue mission to save us. He didn't just come to bring us a new set of rules to live by. There's a spoof form you may have seen for children, and it's called Santa's Visit Application. And the idea is that kids fill out this form, they send it off to Santa before Christmas. And it's got various sections. One section is called Access Details. Access Details, so questions like, what is the pitch of your roof? If the pitch of your roof is more than 30 degrees, please attach a roofing diagram indicating at least two anchor points, and so on and so forth. Now, there's one section which is called, Have You Been Good? And basically, these kids have to rate themselves on a scale which goes from 1 for angelic through to 10 for despicable. And basically, where they come on that line determines how many presents they get from Santa Claus. Now, is it like that with God? So does God's sort of acceptance by God application form, does it have a section saying, have you been good enough? So does Jesus leave his gifts of eternal life, of forgiveness, of place in heaven? Does Jesus leave his gifts for those who have been good enough? A closer look at the painting reveals the very opposite. Because grace means the gifts are only for those who don't deserve them. They're only for those who admit they don't deserve them and who ask God for his forgiveness through Jesus Christ. You see, none of us could ever earn acceptance by God. None of us could. We all fall way, way short of the standard. But that isn't how most people think. Just picture for a moment the tall tower out here in the wharf, One Canada Square, the one with the little pyramid on the top. 50 floors. It's common to assume that, morally speaking, you've got humanity spread across those 50 floors. That's how many people think. Morally speaking, humanity is spread across the 50 floors. And so right at the top, on the 50th floor, you find people like Mother Teresa. And then on the floor just below her, the 49th floor, you've got other people who give their lives to care for others. On the floor just below them, Tiger Woods. Until recently, he's been moved down a few floors now. But that's basically how people think. And then at the other end of the building, so down in the basement you've got the paedophiles, you've got the dictators. Just above them on the ground floor, you've got the traffic wardens. You've got MPs who put in expense claims for 20 grand for having their lawn mowed or, you know, whatever it is. And then the rest of us, we're just spread on the intervening floors. Somewhere in the middle, I guess. That's where most of us would put ourselves, wouldn't it? Somewhere on the middle floors. And so, who does God actually accept? Who's going to get into heaven? Where is the cutoff going to be? Well, here's the interesting thing. Most people assume that God accepts those who are on their floor and above. That's who God accepts. People who are on my floor and above my floor. So we ourselves, we always just make the cut. Those God rejects are those on the floor below me and down. But that isn't how God operates at all. Grace means that none of us are good enough. Those God welcomes are those who receive his grace, his forgiveness, through Jesus Christ. So basically, Christianity is not a religion. It is an anti-religion. It's not about what we do. It is about what God has done for us in Jesus Christ. A fourth assumption is that what's true is what's true for you. So truth is what is true for you. There are no absolutes. Truth is just a personal thing. So if you believe in Jesus, well, that's nice. I'm happy for you. But that's just true for you. That's not true for me. But verse 14 says that Jesus came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Verse 17 says grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. When Jesus came into the world, he came bringing grace and truth. The truth about God, the truth about ourselves, the truth about how we get to know God, the truth about what happens when we die, and so on and so forth. The Christmas message is saying that the truth is revealed in Jesus. In fact, later in his life, when he became a man, Jesus went on to say, "I am the truth." Now, the truth that Jesus reveals, it cannot just be true for me. Either it is the truth about how the real world actually is, or it's false, but it cannot just be true for me. And so if Jesus teaches that when we die, there is heaven and there is hell, well, that is reality for everyone, whether or not you choose to believe it. It cannot just be true for me. I don't know if you've ever been pulled over by the police. I got pulled over once driving into the city, into the square mile. I was going through one of those police checkpoints with the staggered barriers. And the policeman flagged me down and he said, "Sir, the purpose of this chicane is not to test your driving skills. It is to make you slow down," which I thought was a great line. I don't know if they teach them these lines at police college, but it's a good line. Anyway, imagine you've been pulled over by the police. I'm sure it's never happened to you, but just imagine you're pulled over by the police for speeding. And the policeman says to you, "Look, you've been doing 60 in a 30 mile per hour. We've got you on camera. £80 fine." Would you say, "Well, that may be true for you, officer, but that certainly isn't true for me"? Well, if that's how life works in general, why should we think spiritual reality operates any differently? Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Our final assumption is that faith is a leap in the dark. Faith is a leap in the dark. So the idea being that you just have to close your eyes and hope for the best, even though common sense screams out otherwise. So the idea is you've got facts over here and you've got faith over there, and they're completely separate. So facts are what you can be sure of. Faith, the God stuff over here, well, that's just fingers crossed and here's hoping. But look at verse 14. John writes, "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory." We have seen his glory. So John's gospel is an eyewitness account of historical events. This isn't Father Christmas territory. John and these other apostles, they spent years living with and working with this man Jesus. They knew him well. They saw him live. They listened to his teaching. They witnessed his miracles. They saw him die. They saw him after he'd been raised from the dead. We have seen his glory. And their conclusion was that this Jesus was the eternal Word who had come from God and become flesh. This John's gospel here is an eyewitness statement written that we might believe. So when you get to the end of it, John writes this. He says, "These are written that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name." That is not a leap in the dark. So God isn't asking anyone to exercise blind faith. This historical account was written to give us good reasons for faith. And not just faith in the sort of general sense of "I believe that there may be a God up there," but faith in the biblical sense, faith that believes in Jesus, faith that trusts in this Jesus as the God-sent rescuer. Sometimes people say, "I wish I had your faith," to which the reply is, "Well, you could have. You could have. Why not just read through John's gospel with an open mind, and you will find plenty of good reasons for believing in Jesus for yourself." When we take a closer look at the painting, what we actually find is much better than the cliches. And thank goodness for that. Because if Jesus was just a good teacher, he wouldn't be worth following. And if we created God ourselves, he wouldn't be worth worshipping. If the Christian message, if it was just another set of rules, it wouldn't be worth getting out of bed for. If the truth was just what was true for me, it wouldn't be worth building your life on. And if faith was just a leap in the dark, it wouldn't be worth risking a broken ankle for. If the cliches were true, Christmas would not be anything to get remotely excited about. But God becoming man, bringing grace and truth, that is good news. Good news for everyone. For everyone who receives him, who believes in his name. Well, at the very least, it is surely worth a closer look.